Welcome to Comics for Kids, and glad to see that we do have some kids in the audience. You're obviously the experts in this area.
Well, we're going to ask you the question.
Yeah, we're going to find out what you want to read. My name is Janet Hetherington, and I'm just delighted that we have this amazing panel here, all these people who are creating comics for UConn's. And I'm going to start from the very end. Here we have Dan Davis, who is an artist working with the DC Comics group doing kids' comics, all kinds of kid comics, I understand.
Yes, different titles like Samurai Jack and Scooby-Doo. I also do some Shrek, you may have heard of him, and Harry Potter coloring books for Scholastic.
That's cool. I didn't know about the Harry Potter, so I have to check those out. And then next to Dan is Michelle Lefranboise.
Right.
Who is originally from Montreal, I understand, now in Mississauga.
Yes.
And Michelle is actually a science fiction writer who is currently working on some material about Jules Verne and his amazing adventures.
It's not exactly. It's a ship, a spaceship called the Jules Verne,
okay.
Of course, which is sent into a dangerous mission with an incompetent commander. So it's like a space opera.
And next to Michelle, we have Joan Hilty, who is editor of the Johnny DC line of comics at DC. And we'll be hearing about the kinds of comics that you're editing, Joan.
The Johnny DC line, I'll just tell you all the characters that appear in it. And there are quite a few. There are a lot of DC's own characters, like animated versions of the Teen Titans and Batman and the Justice League. And we also produce comics with characters from Cartoon Network and Warner Brothers. So we also produce, like Dan said, Scooby-Doo comics, Looney Tunes comics, and various Cartoon Network shows like Powerpuff Girls, Dexter's Laboratory, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, Ben 10. Unfortunately, I don't think you get to Cartoon Network up here in Canada except on one or two stations.
I just watched Ben 10 this morning.
Okay, all right. So you get a little bit of it. But lots of Johnny Bravo, lots of those kinds of shows.
And then next to Joan, we have Jay Torres, who's been writing one of my favorite books, Titans Go, Teen Titans, and a number of other books as well. Can you tell us about some of the other work that you're doing?
I got my start in the indie press doing some all ages books, like Allison Dare and Jason and the Argobots. And after a few years of that, I started freelancing for DC on Teen Titans Go, Batman Strikes, Legion of Superheroes, and 31st Century, Cartoon Network, Block Party, and so on.
Yeah.
He's written everything, so we just kind of lost track.
And then we have Mike Cho, and Mike, you're an artist, right?
Yes.
And you're doing work with Owl Magazine and Chickadee as well, or just
actually Steve Manali was way down
Steve
the hall.
Okay. He
has, does work on Chickadee. Oh, I don't need a mic because I mean they're so I could shout. Yeah. And I've been drawing for Owl Magazine for years, and I illustrated Max Finder Mysteries, which was a children's detective feature that ran in Owl Magazine. And I'm also doing work for Disney Adventures now.
Excellent. Well, I love Owl Magazine too, so I like reading it as fun. And then we also, and then next to Mike, we have Brian McLaughlin, who I understand is a writer at Owl Magazine.
Yeah, I write the comics for Alex and Charlie, and I also do all sorts of games and puzzles and stuff for them. I do an all-ages web comic called Princess Planet that was in the Toronto Star for a while. But unfortunately there wasn't enough readers in that section and it no longer exists. And I also do cartoons for Nickelodeon Magazine.
So, well, excellent.
And a textbook company as well that's adding cartoons to get kids more interested in their learning process.
Wonderful, wonderful. And then we have Tanya, if I pronounce that correct, Del Rio, who is working, bringing her unique style and presence to Sabrina, the Teenage Witch.
Cool.
Who's always been one of my favorite characters, and you really do have a distinctive style that I really enjoy. So, would you want to tell us a little bit about Sabrina?
It's basically Archie just wanted to take her in a new direction about 3 years ago, and the readership was kind of lagging a little bit, so they wanted to spice it up with something new. and they figured, you know, manga is very popular, so they wanted to kind of take it into a manga direction. And they heard about my work, and they knew that that's kind of the style I draw in, so they contacted me and asked me if I'd basically redesign the character and her story and just start from scratch, and so that's what I've been doing ever since.
Cool.
Pretty nice to have sort of that blank slate and to work with a character that people do recognize, but then sort of give it your own stamp. I'm going to ask a question first, and we will be seeing if we have questions from the audience too, but I'm interested in knowing, when you're working on comics for children, how do you approach this material? Because obviously, when I was growing up, it seemed like all the comics were for children. You know, you had Superman Family and Legion of Super Pets and all of that stuff. And now, you know, some of the titles... a little bit more aimed at adults, I guess, and then you have distinctive comics for children. When you're working on this material, is there a certain mindset approach to the material? I'm interested in hearing from maybe Jay, you know, because you're writing this material, you can talk about that.
No pressure. I'm not sure if I have to put on any kind of particular hat or think in a particular way. It's just, it comes from the characters and the stories, and it's an all ages book. It's supposed to be fun and dynamic, so that's what you try to deliver.
Right.
I mean, if I was writing something else, I've done more angsty teen drama, so that's just, you look at the source material and you just try to adapt to it and do right by it, I guess.
Joan,
Whoops.
It's not.
You told me you turned it off and you turned it on and then you turned it off.
Just to add to that a little bit, it's a little bit of what Jay said. Like I said, we try to find the most popular characters, the ones that kids love the most, the ones that kids identify with the most. I mean, there's a reason why the Johnny DC comics at DC are one of the only comics that still have letters pages. They don't appear in the other books right now, but they do have letters pages because kids are great at writing letters. And they don't just write letters, they write in with, their versions of the Powerpuff Girls. Everybody has their own sort of like creative version of the Powerpuff Girls because they're inspired by those characters. We also just try to make it as fun as possible. Because, frankly, there's a lot of other stuff out there for kids, too, that we need to compete with that weren't there when comics were for all ages. You know, now there's video games, there's cartoons on TV. I mean, when you think all the way back to the very golden age of comics, comics really were considered mostly for kids. You know, even animated entertainment at the time, people forget that the Looney Tunes shorts always ran at the beginning of first-run feature movies for adults. Even the Looney Tunes were kind of for adults when they first got started. So comics were it. Comics had the kids all to themselves, and now they don't anymore. So that just means we have to work twice as hard.
I have something to add as far as writing for a kid and that mindset. I think... thank you. I know when I was younger and I did comics, I really hated it when comics seemed to kind of patronize kids and like talk down to them like they didn't understand anything. And so I know that when I write, I'm keeping in mind my audience, but I'm also not trying to spell it out for them super, I don't want to make it too basic. I do, challenge my readers a little bit, and I think that the readers appreciate that.
Brian, is that your experience as well when you're writing for children, for a young audience?
I think my mindset really is just that when I come up with story ideas and I come up with gags, because I'm mainly doing comedy stuff, I've got a pretty innocent mind still. And while my other friends are making dirty jokes, I'm making pretty clean jokes. But the dirty jokes go into another file and will go into other projects. I don't throw those away. I just let all of it come out, and it just filters into whatever project I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree totally about the not wanting to dumb anything down for kids. Like, it's, I don't write for kids, I write for all ages. Like, hopefully adults and will be able to enjoy the comic as much as any kid will be able to.
Michelle, I think you were saying the same thing earlier, that when you're writing your novels and, when you get your material adapted to comics and animation, you're writing for yourself.
Yeah.
And it's translating to all ages.
Yes. By the way, the Nuage of Phoenix is a novel which I designed the first page because I drew the sketch of all cover pages of my novels. And it is a story that can be read by all ages, and it is even one of the rare science fiction novels that get a general literature award by people who told me afterward that I hate science fiction, but your characters are so, always call that adorable or nice, or you can relate to. So I don't fear going into sometimes difficult subjects. For instance, in the Jules Verne saga, the narrator, which is a very frail Martian young woman, there is no children in the characters in the Jules Verne, but it is aimed at the young public because of the humor, and also there is some danger, there is some political complexity, but there is a lot of humor that in danger. But on one planet, there is the problem of prostitution. And so it's a difficult subject to abort, but I present it in a way that doesn't shy from the subject, but doesn't go into the grisly details. So that's the way I'm doing it. It's like a narcissist. You use the black to make the color stand out more. But I don't use black simply to see, yes, but the gore. Let's add a gore scene there. I do it as I feel the story going, and as I feel, and of course, I have someone called, an editor, yeah. And the editor can sometimes steer me. But it's mainly, he steers me for comprehension reasons, like, okay, your public, it won't understand that or that, or this is too complicated, can you just rephrase it? So in the comic domain, it's the same thing. I do draw some stories with much humor in it. Okay, enough talking.
No, Dan, obviously, you're not writing the priority writing as well. You're drawing mostly.
Mostly drawing. Okay. I've written some scripts for the Alley-Oop comic.
Oh, excellent.
Strip.
Okay.
If you have Alley-Oop, he's a time-traveling caveman, especially to summarize that.
Yeah.
And it's an all-ages thing because it's in the newspaper and probably has mostly older readers.
Yes, yes.
Although you have to write it so kids can understand it and get into it also.
But when you're drawing for the DC comics in particular, I mean, a lot of these are, I don't know if you license to yourself, I mean, you own DC, Warner Brothers, you're all one happy family. You have to draw a model, is there anything that you have to shy away from, or, when you approach the material, is it specifically to be funny, or is it just to advance the story, or how do you approach it?
Well, I get a pretty good script that's all inclusive on all the details. It tells me what Samurai Jack's going to do, for instance, on every page and every panel, really. But I'm free to kind of emphasize the different gags or the shots of that I choose to lay out the page and hopefully put that together in an exciting way. But I'm not at Samurai Jack. I'm not making a story. If I get a script to work from.
Right.
And it's all kind of a team effort.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Mike, with Al Magazine, when you're doing your artwork, is there a particular, you've got your own style that you're using, and is it geared towards kids, or are you just sort of using your own creative impression?
Well, I drew children's books for a long while as well, so I do stuff for an adult audience as well that I write and draw. But when I draw for children, all I try to do is just make it more fun,
Right.
And if you're drawing for comics for children particularly, you want it to be so that there's not, like, they don't have to have known a lot of backstory or there's this world of continuity you have to know, but rather it's just that they can pick it up right away and figure out who the characters are, and most importantly, if it's comics, the storytelling is clear,
Know?
It's not all about drawing the prettiest picture or something, but rather making it so that the story is totally followable, with or without the word balloons. Like, I usually, when I draw, I try to make it so that even if you didn't read the word balloons, you could still figure out exactly what's going on, the general gist of it. You might not get all the gags or whatnot, but you will be able to figure out the story just by looking at the pictures, and everything is very clear. Like, especially since I draw, a mystery comic book. And it's one of those that you have to sort of look through and find the clues and then turn to the back and solve it yourself. You have to make sure that, you know, certain things like red herrings in the plot are sort of well shown and the clues are there, but they're not so obvious that, you know, you look and go, okay, that guy's clearly the villain. I know it because he's got a mustache and he's twirling it, you know, something stupid like that. So you basically just try and make sure that it's clear and all the information that the reader's supposed to get is visible. It's not, you know, like if there's a clue and it's supposed to be that the villain is wearing a red hat, that it's not so tiny in the background, you can't make it out, but at the same time, you can't make it like right in front of you. The guy's, you know, putting on the hat in front of you or something. So.
Now, Joan, I'm interested in knowing, how do you decide which titles are going to join the Johnny DC line? I mean, I know that the Legion of Superheroes is a new one, Crypto is a new one. Is it because they're on TV or...
Yeah. Well, usually, yeah, that's a joint decision with me and my bosses. It usually has to do with what's running on TV. Crypto was actually just a miniseries because it was 6 issues long. It seemed to do very well. But the Crypto cartoon, it's tough to release comics at the same time animation is going because the TV show makes very different decisions from the publishing show, and something might launch for and run for a season or two and then just go into reruns. We need to keep putting out comic books every month, so mostly we decide when a new show starts to sort of start a comic book and see how that supports it, and we've gotten better and better slowly at releasing it around the same time as the show. I think Teen Titans Go had already been on the air for a while when we started the comic, but we released Crypto a little bit closer, and Legion we were able to time just about right. So it really varies from book to book.
And how do you know when a kid's comic is doing well? Is it based on the circulation? Is that it basically?
A little bit, although the numbers are very different from the regular comic books. And you know, I live two lives because I also edit some superhero comic books, and in fact both Jay and Dan have worked with me on those comic books as well. In fact, the same title, Blue Beetle. Those circulation numbers are very different because comic shops right now, although it's changing, we're mostly geared to adults, so they sell in lower numbers in comic shops, but it's becoming increasingly popular to put them in graphic novel formats and digest formats. So we look at how the monthly comic is selling, we look at how many letters come in for it, but we also look at how well the digests do when we put them out. There's a whole range of ways to look at it.
There's also the foreign market.
Yeah, no, it's true. We also, the tricky line we always have to run is that, believe it or not, well, and of course you can, because what am I saying? I'm in another country. What releases in the what's popular in the United with kids in the United States might not be the same as what's popular with kids in France or Europe. In fact, in the van over here this morning, I was telling somebody that we don't put out a Tom and Jerry comic, but Tom and Jerry is still huge overseas. Johnny Bravo isn't as popular as it used to be here in the States, but Johnny Bravo is still very popular in South America. So they like us to keep them in the comic books because once we publish these stories here in the United States, there are also foreign magazines that buy them for kids in South America to read. And they really like Johnny Bravo for some reason. We don't know why. Johnny Bravo and Samurai Jack, very big in South America, and Tom and Jerry, very big in Europe. Don't know why, don't ask questions, they just are, so that's cool.
I'm interested, you were mentioning the digest size. It seems that more and more comics are actually going, like I think of them as, I guess, manga size, you know, that sort of little square-bound size, and I'm interested in getting your impressions. Dan, have you had to draw to those proportions, or do you still just do regular comic size and then they get shrunk down?
Now that you mention it, I think a Samurai Jack manga-sized comic would be better.
The bomb.
You do have to keep it open if they're going to be reduced, and I like to know ahead of time if it's going to be reduced in digest size. I don't put as many panels on the page, and I don't like to read things reduced real tiny, so I'm very conscious of that. I like to keep it large and open so that everybody can get into the pictures. And the larger you show the faces, the more people are drawn into the story, I think.
And Mike, I understand the owl material is being compiled into book form?
Yes.
Yes, and is it a regular trade paperback size, or it is a digest size as
it's
well?
It's a little digest size.
It's a little.
It's a little bit more like a digest size.
It's not quite the small digest.
Well, it's smaller than a regular comic book, so okay. It's not tiny manga size, which is like almost like a pocketbook, but it's somewhere in between the two.
Okay.
And I like that format personally myself, because as a kid, when I was a kid and I'd go on vacations or on a car ride, I don't want to take a giant hardcover book. I want something that I could take with me in the car and I can read and I can fold back the spine, and I'm on the beach and I'm reading my Spider-Man digest, and that's much more preferable to me, and the more pages the better, rather than I'd rather not get something that's like 22 pages and giant. I would rather get 150 pages and small, because you can read it in a tent, when you're camping with a flashlight, right? Whereas a giant hardcover, you're gonna have to be propping that up on something, So I prefer drawing it, and I personally prefer, in the future, I would rather see more children's comics, smaller and portable.
Right. And are all the comics that people are working on here, well, I know Tanya, it's in color, they're in color, yes. Mm-hmm. So is color important to reaching a child reader, do you think?
I'm actually going to throw that question to the kids in the audience.
Okay.
Do you like color stuff or black and white stuff or both?
I like both.
Like both?
Okay.
Good.
Oh, yeah.
But more color.
More color? Because
yeah.
I don't know if you guys saw, there's a Goosebumps comic that's part of the bags that was handed out for the show that's in black and white. And I thought it looked incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it looked awesome. The Goosebumps stuff looks really great.
Yeah?
So.
Okay. Yes? Michelle?
If I can add it, this is my only manga for the moment. It's not, it would have, if it were to be reduced to manga size, it would have to be, the layout would have to be redone.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But there was a series that was called Elf Quest by Wendy Pini, Richard and Wendy Pini, that I loved. And the first publication was in black and white, and it was wonderful. And later, when the series had much success, there was a reprint in colors. But I think in the 80s, it was those colors that were like, you see, four, I cannot explain, it's like four shades in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not find it as nice with the colors that I loved it more without the colors. So that's just an impression sometimes, because of the artists, they work without the colors, and they manage to do something very wonderful without it. But it depends. If someone has never seen the comics without the colors, the comic with the colors is not bad.
Well, I think the popularity of manga has proven that.
Here we go.
I think that the popularity of manga has proven that kids are willing to read comics that are not necessarily in color. I think there was a misconception that kids would not want to read anything that was black and white because, they're kids, they like color. But, I think if the stories are good and the characters are interesting, it doesn't matter if it's black and white or color, as long as the story is strong enough to keep it interesting.
And I think the color,
the cover has to be in color, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, Tanya, it'd be interesting to find out what your process is when you're writing a story, and then of course you're going to be drawing it as well. Do you write the script in full and then do the illustration, or do you sort of work in conjunction with it, or how does that process work?
I come with the synopsis first, which I show to my editor, and then once that's approved, I write the entire script and I break it down into panels and everything like that. And sometimes it does change once I get the actual drawing, because sometimes I'll see, I can merge these two panels into one, or I'll move this over here. But for the most part, the script is, completed, and then I work from the script, like an artist would work from another writer's script.
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as reaching the young audience, more and more comics and graphic novels, especially in the digest format, the smaller formats, are finding their ways into bookstores and libraries, and how are you finding that's had an impact on reaching younger readers, bringing them back into comics? Joan, do you have any comments on that?
I don't have any hard proof yet, but I've been especially impressed with the librarians.
Mm-hmm.
I've met a lot of librarians over the past couple of years that are doing amazing work. Getting graphic novels and kids' comics into their libraries. When I was growing up, there wasn't a comic shop in my town, and I would just go to the library and I would check out bound volumes of old comic strips from the 30s and 40s that I was way too young to read, because it was old EC Comics horror and the old Dick Tracy comic strip, which was very violent. It gave me nightmares, and my mother would go yell at the librarian, so it's part of the reason I'm giving them props now. But now they've got so many more options. They've got like book-style things for kids, and they're really trying hard. I actually went to a comics convention just for kids in New York, where they set up a fellow named Alex Simmons, who writes a comic called Dark Jack, set up a comic convention just for kids at Bronx Community College, and a couple of librarians flew in, I believe, from Illinois to attend this and talked a lot about how they were getting comics in there. So I think librarians are doing great work, and influencing them, talking to them and telling them you want comics, kids' comics in libraries, is as effective, if not more so, than books and than bookstores and comic shops.
Do the people in the audience, do you go to comic book stores to get your comics, or do you go to libraries or bookstores?
I
guess, well, you know, again, when I was growing up, you could go to your corner store and they had the racks of old bed comics, which are wonderful to read. But actually, I see them more now in convenience stores, too. I think they are getting some more distribution, which is great to see.
Sure.
And there's also Free Comic Book Day now to get kids back into reading comics. So I'm just wondering, what did everybody do? Did everybody do something on Free Comic Book Day? We'll start with Dan. What did you do?
Yeah, I appeared at a store signing, mm-hmm. and sketched for free and handed out plain comic books.
Yeah,
it was a great event.
How did it go? Did you find there were a lot of children?
A lot of people didn't know comics were still for sale. So that wasn't, maybe that wasn't so encouraging, but yeah, they liked what they saw once they got it in there.
Yeah. So and then they were interested in seeing the characters you were drawing too, because obviously.
Yes, because I do a lot of the cartoon characters on TV. Yeah.
Right. Michelle, were you participating in Free Comic Book Day at all?
What is Free Comic Book Day?
Okay.
What I do is presentations in schools, because as I am a writer and a comic artist, a novelist and a comic artist, the two conjunct,
yes.
Superpose, it's interesting for them, so they effectively like to see someone drawing. Mm-hmm. Even if the drawing is not the best, because sometimes I have just 30 seconds to do with a quick sketch. They like it.
And obviously, Joe, in the DC, you know, put out comics for Free Comic Book Day to give away. And how do you make that selection every year? Which ones are going to be
I mean, it's usually the one that we want to tell the most people about. That's
okay.
The newest this year was Legion of Superheroes.
Right.
And again, if you got a comic pack, there's a free Legion comics here. And actually, at the end of today, Jay has been nice enough to bring a bunch of Teen Titans Go that I hope I could say you're free to take at the end of the panel as a bonus. So we're having our own little free comic book day here to a certain degree.
Excellent. And Jay, did you do any signings on Free Comic Book Day?
Yeah, I was at the Begaling this year.
Okay.
With a whole bunch of people. I mean, they do a really good job of bringing local artists in and
right.
doing signings and promoting. It's really, the way they do it is really cool, because it's outside of the store.
Oh, really?
And they even have people at the subway stations handing out leaflets,
oh.
directing them to the store.
Did they have, I know the Beguiling actually is, to me, it's actually a bookstore. It's not a comic book store, it's a bookstore, because you go downstairs and you have books, you have graphic novels, art books, and all that stuff. Then you go upstairs to see all the comics. But did they have people dressed up in costume, or is it more just sort of focusing on the art and...
I remember seeing a couple of cosplayers.
Okay.
I'm not sure if they were on their way somewhere else or they actually dressed up for the day, but as far as I know, there was nobody associated with the store that was dressed up.
Okay.
I know that other people do that, though.
Actually, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, please.
I was actually just going to ask the kids and parents in the audience if they'd been to a Free Comic Book Day, and whether or not they have, what would bring you, besides a free comic book, to a Free Comic Book Day? I know, you didn't expect to get asked this many questions.
Yeah,
I'm just curious.
Right, yeah.
Can
get free lunch.
Free lunch, okay. All right.
Cookies. Cookies. That would bring me.
Dessert table.
I think it's a great thing that you're doing for the industry for Free Comic Book Day. What I didn't realize is that the retailers actually have to purchase these in advance. I really thought it was a free So when I talk to
it's for you guys.
It's the most important thing, but they're undertaking it as well. So they're actually involved. It's a group experience. I think that's what it's called. In fact, just two other comments. I heard people lining up in front of stores in the morning because they heard of Comic Book Day, Free Comic Book Day, which I think is very encouraging. They came with their families.
Yes.
One of the first Free Comic Book Day events I ever did was in Halifax at Strange Adventures, and like we were flown down and everything, and when we came out of the hotel, there was a lineup around the corner, and I didn't think it was for Free Comic Book Day. I thought there was a movie or something, or I don't know what, a sale happening in another store, and then we followed the line and realized that it ended at the front door of the comic shop. So it was really encouraging. I don't know if it's the same kind of excitement these days. Or maybe I'm just jaded and I don't care, but I can't tell if people are lining up as much as they used to for that. I hope so.
Owl is a different publication. It's not a comic book per se, but did you do anything for Free Comic Book Day? Or
yeah, actually.
Oh, you were part of it?
Yeah, we were at the Dialing and sitting outside, and lots of kids came by, and I guess the Spider-Man movie had just opened that weekend, so most of the artists there were doing sketches.
Right.
So I drew a lot of Spider-Man. I'd never drawn Venom before in my life, but I totally busted out like a dozen Venom sketches. And I didn't know how to draw him, and then someone pointed out it's like Spider-Man in the black costume, but on steroids or something, and with a big tongue. So I drew that. And, you know, I really love Free Comic Book Day, and you're right, like Strange Adventures, places like The Beguiling, Silver Snail, really go out of their way to try and encourage more people to read it, because it's true. A lot of kids don't go to comic book shops anymore. They get their comics like from Disney Adventures at the supermarket, or they get it at the library.
Right.
And you know, the more kids that can buy comics, and it's like you're saying, you said that you get them at the spinner racks these days, but most of the time nowadays the comic shops are geared toward the older reader.
Right.
And I wish personally more kids would go and get comics, and if it takes comics going into bookstores and convenience stores again, I'm all for it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I personally think that's the future for me, And if I could just say something, I kind of understand why librarians are using comics more and more and plugging them into the school libraries, because the thing that I notice as a writer and artist for children's books is that more and more there's an emphasis on getting the reluctant readers to read, and comic books are the best way to do that. Just as an example, I once read an article by Will Eisner, and he was talking about how in the 40s they would make these manuals for GIs to read. About how to fix their Jeep, how to, clean their gun or something, or how to spot an enemy plane. And when they would write these as manuals in text, no GI would read them, because they would say things like, you know what, we're busy fighting a war and we don't have time to read a book about how to fight the war.
Right.
So they would make them in comic form, and they would say, here's how you clean a gun in 5 steps in pictures.
Yes.
Right? And every GI would read that, because it took no effort at all to read that, because it's got pictures and they're fun and, there's a gag every few panels or something like that. And when I was reading that article, all I did was just take out the word GIs and put in reluctant reader boys. And you had exactly the same thing, which was, you got to keep their attention. The picture will keep their attention. A picture says 1,000 words, and I would, if a reluctant reader boy would rather sit there, or a girl would sit there and rather read something that has pictures in comic form than in something that's a long text piece that takes a while to get into. So I can see why, I get a lot of assignments now from, companies that are going, we're really interested in starting a graphic novel division in our children's book company, because of the fact that we're trying to reach out to the kids who've given up on reading, and but they read, they watch anime, they read some manga, they play video games, and we're trying to get those kids back into reading in the best way, is through comics. And
the American Library Association actually has, the list they put out every year?
Yes.
There's a category called reluctant readers, and I've seen in the last maybe 5 years that they've been putting at least 1 or 2 graphic novels on the list, which I think is a great thing.
That's great.
I think it would be great if they would do just a graphic novel list for reluctant readers and then a regular, but I guess they're not there yet.
It's coming, I think, yeah.
To complete what Jane was saying, I don't know if you're from Ontario, but in Ontario they try to, just for the reluctant readers, they try to put comic books in the curriculum.
Yeah.
Scholar curriculum, comic book and science fiction, so yes!
Yeah, the interesting thing is Oni Press These days, they're all ages books, sell more to schools and libraries than they do the direct market.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, we'll get no sales from the direct market for, like, 6 months, and then suddenly a library will say, we need 200 copies, or a school group will say, we'll need 50 copies. So I think it's really encouraging, you know, to hear that stuff.
Yeah, I find that with the OWL books as well, is that when we put out a compilation of Max Finder books, they don't sell very well at the comic shops, but every time the Beguiling has an event where they, you know, they program for school librarians, they buy them all because they're familiar with it, because they've got OWL magazine, and they go, oh, we know what this is. This is a book for kids aged 9 to 12, and it makes them read because it's a detective story, and so you solve a mystery, and we're going to take, you know, 100 copies. And I always figure, yeah, that's exactly what I expected, you know, because a lot of kids don't go to comic shops, but school librarians know that, you know, the value of this type of thing, and they'll plug it into the school.
And what about subject matter? Because I mean, yes, it's one thing. I mean, I understand you have an established cartoon, and you're going to be doing a comic about it. But are there larger themes that you're trying to explore? I mean, even with Sabrina, are there certain themes that you're trying to explore with that comic?
Yeah, definitely. Right now, there's kind of a storyline where actually a bunch of the kids are plotting to overthrow the queen.
Yeah,
the queen of the magic realm. So, it's about kind of like there are kids. No one thinks that they can do anything. It's kind of like an empowerment thing where you know they feel like there's something wrong going on with their queen, and so they want to fix it, but of course they're kids and no one's going to listen to them, so you got to take matters into their own hands. And of course, even with Sabrina, just basic things of just, you know, school and pressure and feeling like you have to live up to what other people think you should be, and, you know, and of course just all the relationships between the characters. I mean, these are all things that, you know, I know I went through growing up, so, you know, it's themes that never change with every generation that, you know, you can relate to. So
Brian, I mean, you're writing a lot of gags, but
the comic that I do, The Princess Planet, is all about a princess who's, like, you know, being taken care of and all this stuff, and she throws that away and goes out to have her own quest and discover herself. And that sort of recurring theme that, you know, having things handed to you on a silver platter isn't necessarily the best way to go through life is underlying a lot of the jokes that I'm doing, and that, you know, she wins things by being smarter than things rather than, you know, beating something up.
Right.
Although she does beat things up because she's smart enough to figure out how to beat them up. But again, you know, there is a lot of underlying themes, I think, of when I'm trying to do something for a kid. Sometimes it's a gag, but a lot of times also I want to have something. If there's nothing to say, I might as well not be doing it.
Right.
For me as an artist, the thing that because I don't write scripts a lot of times unless it's my own work, the thing I try to do is always be more inclusive about the children depicted.
Okay.
So if the script says there's, you know, 5 white Canadian kids or something, I usually try to change that up a little bit so that there's more diversity. Because, you know, you're, you know, in a small town or something like that, especially in the cities, there's quite a wide variety of, like, ethnicities and different types of kids out there. So you don't want it to be just a stereotype. But we've gotten that a lot in the past. I mean, when I was growing up, I'd open up a Marvel comic and the only black guy was, you know, Luke Cage, right? And it was, yeah, exactly. And it's like, I was always going, like, man, when is there going to be an Asian superhero that's cool, you know? Or, you know, or, like, instead of being the sidekick mechanic to Green Lantern, why can't he be Green Lantern, you know? So now I always try to keep that in mind when I write stories. It's like, you know what, the detective, like, our lead character is a half Asian kid, and, you know, his sidekick is a Latino girl, you know, and it's like there's a lot of comics already that serve that have the white blonde guy who's, you know, got blue eyes, so why not have some other ones?
Right.
I'm almost reluctant to say how subversive we are in Teen Titans Go. I have an editor sitting right beside me.
I don't care.
And like my editor that I deal with directly, we're kind of cheeky and we put stuff in there that maybe shouldn't be. Anyway, the thing about Teen Titans, whether you're talking about Teen Titans Go or the Silver Age Titans or the DCU Titans, the themes in the book are essentially about family, about friendship, bonding together, coming of age. And these are very universal themes that we see in pretty much every, you know, good work of fiction. So this is what we try to do. At the same time, you have to dress it up with costumes and fighting and so on and so forth. But sometimes they're fighting about who's using the bathroom too much, and sometimes they're love, you know, interests and so on. But you'll notice a lot of times the villains are adults, And they're adults who just don't quite get it. So there you go.
Yeah. Joan, do you try to have underlying themes in the books, or is it just mainly to have nice, good, clean, fun books?
It's both, and I mean, I'm a little more limited than the rest of these guys in what I can do, because again, I'm only speaking as the editor, not right. the artist or the writer, and I'm the only kids' books I directly edit right now are ones that are based on the TV shows, so I have to loop the TV show people and make sure they're cool with everything
right.
too, and we kind of follow the leads of the kind of themes that are in those shows. But even those, like Jay says, are universal and fun and distinct to each one. I mean, Powerpuff Girls is about three sisters. And in a way, I think it's exploring the lives of, even though they're technically all twins, you know, they were kind of all, they're three little superpowered girls that were created in a burst of chemicals. I think they're all three different ages, because I think one of them is a youngest child, one of them is a middle child, and one of them is an oldest child, because I'm telling you right now, Bubbles is the youngest, Buttercup is a middle child, and Blossom is a bossy oldest child, which is why I like her the best. And a lot of that is about, so that's what I love so much about that show, is it's not just about little girls, it's about each girl has a very distinct personality. And you just find what you identify with, because I think that Craig McCracken, who made the show, thought about what it's like to have a sister or a brother and to be bossed over by a younger sister or brother or bossing, vice versa.
And Michelle, you spoke a little bit about some of the subject matter that could be sensitive, but
yeah.
It seems like you're not afraid to shy away from it. But at the same time, you are sensitive to who's going to be reading it.
I'm sensitive to the social context, of course. Just to stay in my far-fetched future, science fiction story, the Jules Verne saga. As you see, they are all adults in that, but the narrator is a younger adult, and some young adults are born. For instance, I deal with the subject of the commander is an alcoholic and an incompetent. and it has very nice scenes. The comic book will have very nice scene about that. But it's also kind of dangerous in a sense, and it has harbors a dark secret. So sometimes the appearance are not what they
right,
are.
Right.
But also, the characteristic of my story is for young adults, is that until now, every one of the main characters of the narrator are physically flawed. Like in Les Nuages de Phoenix, the Clouds of Phoenix, the main narrator has lost the use of her legs at a very early age. And she has robotic legs instead mm-hmm. that can permit her to run at 8 kilometers an hour,
cool.
for instance. And she doesn't have her own voice. It's another 50-year-old woman's voice coming out of a 10-year-old girl. So there are some strange things like that in my stories. And the Jules Verne is a very afraid Martian woman, because in the light gravity of Mars, the bones are brittle. So because she knows her bones can break easily, she's a bit timid, prudent. Not to say a coward, but she will have to write about those defects. Also, I think that it is a bit subversive. It has, even if I am in my life a very religious person, the Gaian Alliance is a totally godless civilization. So they are thrown off all the religions away after the big terrorists and things. Big turmoils, or two centuries of turmoils, and there are people who have kept secretly some religious faith. So there will be, there is also that aspect of spiritual surge in the story.
And Dan, you mentioned you were writing Ali Hu. I'm interested in finding out how you approach that, but also when you're drawing the DC books. I mean, do you have any restrictions? Like, I sort of remember from years ago that they couldn't draw a Supergirl with her legs apart. That they had to be close together.
That was a good idea.
Yeah. do you run into anything like that in terms of what can be portrayed and not portrayed?
Oh, not really. I mean, it's, we all know what we were like as children and what children... It's a pretty general accepted idea of what would be okay for kids, and we're pretty well within that realm in the cartoon books that we do. Alley-oop is in the newspaper strips, and there's no more homogenized audience than what the newspapers want. And they play it very safe.
Mm-hmm.
So I like all-out action stuff, but we don't have to show blood or things like that. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of running and a lot of swinging things, but you know, you don't have to show the contact or the actual violence, so we keep it exciting. And
right.
That's the main key, I think.
And what about fire? Because I know in animation, they really don't like to have fire, but yeah, I mean, like... If,
what do you mean, specifically?
Well, like, for example, my understanding is, like, cartoon TV shows, like when you're having, like, something like the Superman animated show, they don't like characters that have fire. And I know, like...
Well, they don't want anything that somebody would imitate.
Yeah, okay.
So that may be what...
Yeah, imitative is one concern that that never changes. And that's very subjective, because you could argue that anyone could want to imitate Superman, put on a cape and jump off a roof, so why do we keep him around? But it's more commonly practical stuff like weapons. We try to stay away from... characters threatening each other very directly with like sharp knives or firing guns at each other, which is another reminder that the Looney Tunes was originally for kids, because you know, it's hard to find an old Looney Tunes cartoon that doesn't have, you know, Daffy getting his head blown up with his beak winding up on the other side of his head, and Elmer chasing after him with the blunderbuss, and we don't have that as much in the comics. No, you just find other ways to do it.
Right.
To put his beak on the other side of his head.
So you have to be very creative.
Yes.
Do you still have cross-dressing Bugs Bunny?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Bugs dresses up as a girl all the time. Absolutely.
So I'd see that some things don't change.
Yeah.
I'm interested. I'm going to ask the audience, is there a particular character that you wanted to see go into comics? Is there somebody that you, or a concept or something that you've read or seen in a movie that you'd like to see made into comics that hasn't been made into comics? Can't think of anything?
How about Harry Potter?
Maybe.
Yes? Over here, yes? Sorry. Right.
And not just Bugs Bunny.
Yes,
exactly. He was just transvestite. It's true.
Well, actually, that's a good point. What is the age range that we're talking about here? Because I sort of got the impression we're talking about a younger audience rather than a young adult audience, which I think might be what your concept would be aimed at. What's the age range for the comics in the DC line in particular?
Just speaking for myself,
yes.
You guys should tell me what you're shooting for.
Yeah.
We pretty much just go up to about 11 to 12 or 13 years.
So, but you're starting about what?
8 and up.
Okay, interesting.
But it kind of depends on the book, because we've discovered that the biggest... Okay, the Titan cartoon, for example, and the comic was originally aimed at boys 6 to 8 or 6 to 10, but we found that preteen and teenage girls are more into the book than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least they're more vocal about the book. So I guess you just never know until you put it out there.
Is that because there's such interesting female characters, do you think? I mean,
oh, for sure. I mean, it's all about... And they choose sides. They're either Raven Girls or Starfire Girls. You know, and they're very opinionated about who should end up with whom. And
they've got it all worked out.
It would be kind of interesting if there were some more contemporary characters where you're never sure if they're a boy or a girl. They go back and forth, because there actually are some very classic characters where that's always been very up in the air. Tweety Bird. example, and if any of you know the old classic comic strip Crazy Cat,
with
Crazy Cat and Ignatz the mouse, Crazy was very much in love with Ignatz, and it was never quite clear, you know, so it never really seemed to matter. All that mattered was that Crazy just lived to get hit with a brick by Ignatz.
And then wasn't there a dog too?
Officer Puff.
Officer Puff, right.
He was a copier. One of my favorites.
Just to respond to the young lady, if you're interested in those kinds of themes, you should really look into some of the manga and some of the manhwa coming from Korea. They really cover a lot of themes of, you know, sexual identity and even, you know, gender crossing and that sort of thing. It just hit me now because my wife is an editor for... Yes, for example. But my wife is an editor for a line of Korean comic books, and it just hit me that there's a lot of stuff like that in the material that she's been reviewing. So you should try to look into that.
What age, well, obviously, Archie comics. I mean, when I hate to say it, but when people say kids comics, they immediately think Archie. I mean, they do. And one of the things I think is because when you go to supermarkets, you find Archie comics there. What age group is Sabrina targeted toward?
It's definitely targeted a slightly older audience than the general Archie comics. We've thought of it like 12 and up, mm-hmm. actually. Up to about 16, 12 to 16, yeah. So there's definitely no mature themes in it, really, but the storylines are a little more complex, and you know, it's definitely a much older audience than your typical Archie comic. It's kind of also the same audience that reads Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, so. Yeah. And what about Owl?
Owl's sort of in the same range of 8 to 12, and I'm right now, like, when I'm... I've got characters that are supposed to have romances, but they're not allowed to actually date. They have crushes, and they can pass notes, and they can go to the dance, but they can't actually, you know, have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. And it's always just around the corner, like the little redheaded girl in Charlie Brown.
Okay. So, what do you see in the future for comics for kids? There seems to be an interest redeveloping there, and do you think that it's going to be a viable market? Are parents bringing their children to reading comics again? Is it a positive outlook, in your opinion?
If the parents read comics, yeah. If the parents read comics, yeah, absolutely. They bring the kids in. I personally want to see more and more comics geared toward kids, because that's what got me reading into comics. You know, personally, one of the things that's kind of depressing to me these days is that superhero comics, when some people talk about superheroes, they're like, you know, oh man, that's for adults. And I'm like, no, superheroes are for kids, mm-hmm. man, you know? Like, I don't want to be down on the industry or anything like that, but I picked up a Spider-Man comic, and I picked it up just based on the artwork because it looked mm-hmm. so charming, and the whole story was written for adults. And I was pointing out, you know, there was a parental advisory sticker on this, but it was on the back, right? Yeah, and right at the bottom, and it bothered the heck out of me, because of the fact that I'm sitting there going, and I was complaining to a friend of mine, and I was saying, you know, there was a parental advisory sticker on this, but it was on the back, right? And he's pointed out, you know, there should never be a Spider-Man comic with a parental advisory sticker, because, and people go like, no, you gotta make it more realistic, you know, Spider-Man, I mean, like, you know, if he does have these spider powers, he's gonna be angst-ridden, and he's gonna have these problems. And I'm sitting there going, look, this is a guy that climbs walls, you know? Make the leap that, you know, this guy is going to be like, you know, he's going to put on a red and blue costume and he's going to shoot webs and something like that. You know, do you really have to make it more realistic at that point? I've already bought that. It's fantasy, you know? It just seems a little bit weird to me that when I go to comic shops and some people are just sitting there discussing comics and they're like, it's really an adult thing. Like, you know, you got to make them more adult. And I'm like, no, because a little 12-year-old kid in me who read these comics, I love superheroes, sure. But the new generation of kids are reading manga. Right, because it was left alone. It was their book. You know, it was like the adults weren't reading it, and the adults were reading superheroes. And I really don't like that, because I really love superheroes. I mean, you know, when I was a kid and I was lonely and learning about science or something like that, I would learn all that stuff from superhero comics, and I identified with superhero comics, and I wished I could be Spider-Man, and I wish there were more Spider-Man books that were geared toward kids. And I know some people will tell you, like, you know, we wish we could sell them for kids, but when we make them for kids, they don't sell. Right? And it's like, that's because you put them in these comic shops where only 30-year-old guys go. You know? And it's like, I want to see more comic, superhero comic books that are like available at bookstores. So that, because the kids that don't go to comic shops, they'll sit there on the floor of the Chapters or the Borders and read these books. And I want to see more and more superhero comics there, you know? I personally think Spider-Man's for 12-year-old kids, and I love it when it's written for 12-year-old kids. You know, I don't want to see Spider-Man talking with Black Cat about sex.
You know? And I'll just make this very, very brief comment here. Somebody complained about that to one of the writers who wrote Spider-Man, said, you know, like, why is it that, you know, like, you have Spider-Man and Black Cat talking of making all the sexual innuendo stuff, and the writer complained back and said, you know, that's because you probably sit in a lonely basement and you don't have a girlfriend or something like that, but people who have girlfriends actually talk like this to their girlfriends, so you probably never dated anybody in your life. And I was pointing out, you know what? I'm a married man, and so I have a life and everything. That's why I don't need it in my superhero books that the superhero guy talks about sex, because that's just fantasy for me, you know? Right. The guys who actually have kissed a girl, you know, yeah, and stuff like that, don't need it in their Spider-Man book. Right. You know, they don't need Spider-Man talking about sex or something like that, because right, that's, you know, that's fantasy, you know? And, you know, it seemed a little weird to me that way.
I'm looking forward to when they continue to do that with, like, Curious George and Big Bird, you know?
I have a comment about that.
When I went to the Free Comic Book Day, I was actually kind of disappointed at the store that Archie was invited to, because it was obviously a store that usually only middle-aged men go to, and they didn't put any signs out front saying that there was Free Comic Book Day or anything like that. And we noticed that they alphabetized all the comics that just happened, like Sonic and all these kids' comics, were on the top shelf of the comic store. So even if a kid went in there, they wouldn't even be able to see the comics. I'm not that short, but I could barely see the top of the title. Like, it's ridiculous. So I agree with that. You know, comics for kids need to start branching out outside the comic store. And as much as I support my local comic store and I really love what they do, I think that they need to be more accessible, because, you know, the kids are with their moms in the supermarket. They need to be more in the supermarkets. They need to be more at gas stations, all these different places that they used to be and aren't anymore.
I can tell you, if I can just be real brief, because yes, I know we're just about out of time. Yep. I can say, just speaking for DC, that we are working, I think, after a long period of mostly focusing on kids' comics that were based on TV shows that often weren't our characters, we're continuing to do this, but we're going to start this fall doing more and more comics, kids' comics that are our characters. It's not far enough along right now for me to be able to get out a lot of the details, but we're going to be, there will be more about this in San Diego. We're going to start doing more all-ages comics with DC superhero characters, more different, like, kid versions of superhero characters, because I think we see how attached kids still are to those characters. In fact, how attached the writers of the adult version of superheroes are now to them. If you look at the contemporary, the current version of Justice League, Vixen's got the costume from the Justice League Unlimited show because they love that costume so much. They borrowed the show, the costume design for the grown-ups comic from the kids' show. So, you know, we want to kind of keep all that good stuff for ourselves for the kids' comics now. So there'll be some announcements in San Diego. You'll see more material from DC.
I have a quick question.
I just want
to find out how you guys are using the internet to market your publications and also target kids. Like, is it a vehicle for yourselves, or are you using the internet to, you know, try and reach out to kids and, you know, get them to, you know, be aware of the comics or get them involved and read the comics?
We have to be, just speaking for DC, I'd like to know how other people do it, but we have to be very limited with that, because you have to be real careful with the internet and kids. At the end of the day, we're not a web service, we're a publishing company, and there's a lot of precautions you have to take with marketing to kids online and making sure that, you know, that they're signing up for a website that their grown-ups approve of, and we don't really have the resources right now to do that at DC, so we pretty much stick to the traditional channels.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to wrap, but I want to say thank you so much to our panel of speakers, and it's fascinating. I learned a lot, and I hope our audience enjoyed it too. Thank you so much.
And feel free to come up and get a free Teen Titans Go comic from written by the great Jay Torres.
Nice meeting you too.
Thank you so much. Yeah.